Hello, everyone.
Hey, how's it going?
Not too bad, George. How about you? I saw you left quite a few comments on my PR.
Yeah, nothing too bad there, right?
No, I'm actually really glad that you were so pedantic and actually went through all of it from what I could tell.
Yeah,
So,
I was
really cool.
trying to
Thanks.
find more major issues, but I couldn't really. So good job.
Oh well, yeah.
Hey, Patrick.
Hey George, it's been a while. It's good to have you on the call again.
Yeah.
Let's see if Miro's gonna join. I think he would, but I'm not sure. I'll just ping him, and then we can start perhaps. In the meantime.
Is this bot new? The meeting analytics?
Oh yeah, that's something new introduced by Hyperledger apparently. It's possible to opt out of it. There's some information about what it is in the chat. So I don't know, experimentally the last it started since last meeting, and experimentally I just kept it on. I will see what kind of things this is, what kind of metrics this is gonna produce.
Cool.
But I don't know, if we feel uncomfortable, I guess we can turn it off and just have normal meetings without having our voices analyzed.
No
It's some
worries.
sort of AI technology, as I understand, to analyze the like who you know how the meeting was going, essentially. Make some
Right.
sort of metrics out of it. Hey Mira, we have Mira on the call as well.
Hi.
Oh,
Hello.
welcome. So let's get started. I'll share my screen. So for starter, I'll display this disclaimer as per usual Hyperledger policy, the antitrust policy notice. All right, let's get into it. So I think it's gonna be an interesting call today. We have since we have big changes going on and Bogdan's PR and also some stuff related to serialization. So just yeah, short overview of agenda here. Wait, this is wrong meeting. This is this old one. Yeah, this is it. Yeah, just as usual, we'll cover the stuff which we've done, which is going on, we are planning to do, and then finish the meeting with the discussion about the serialization approach and sort of philosophy. Yeah, and I guess that could be interesting discussion here. Yeah, let's for starter, we have kind of completed the PR, and you George, as I understand, you did pretty thorough review, so really it's really appreciated. It's a huge PR. As for everyone, anyone else perhaps tuning into that call, so we have recently in a previous month or two introduced new state machine or like new state machine for a connection protocol, which is however not coupled with any sort of mediation at all. So the mediation has to be done by the user, the consumer of Aries VCX and themselves. Yeah, and so this is pretty like vanilla connection, doing the minimal amount of things needed to accommodate the connection protocol. And this has been introduced about a month or so ago. And then Bogdan here took initiative to kind of rewrite it actually and use completely new approaches to how we do state machines in Aries VCX. And yeah, it's really great improvement. We have covered like all details and advantages in a previous call, so feel free to take a look there if you like, if you are interested in the details. All right. I guess that should be enough of a brief introduction of this PR we've done recently. And then small like notice, it's always a bright moment when somebody new comes in and submits PR. So we have this small PR from Rafael. It's a fix in iOS wrapper. Some method was failing, so this is fixing the issue. This was deleted.
I checked the message that left. They opened a new MR.
Oh, this was elsewhere. Okay, I see. Is that any different by chance? Maybe there's something. No, it's the same thing, I guess. Yeah. So yeah, happy to have a new contributor here. And then stuff in progress. Well, apart from the state pattern, which is not yet merged, but it's mostly complete. There's been an interesting PR open from you. George, sorry. Some sort of gap in my mind. So I wanted to ask if you can like tell us a little bit about it and how it's going.
Yeah. Do you want me to give a quick demo on?
Sure. That would be amazing.
Cool. Just a question on the state pattern stuff. What is left on that for it to be merged in?
Nothing much.
I think we were just like having the final discussions about this serialization format, that kind of relates to the ending of this meeting. So I think we can leave it for there. But it's pretty much done. Yeah, it's just like small nitpicking, like how should this serialize, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, well, let's leave it to the end. So let's do the UniFFI now. Cool. Or maybe Bogdan, do you have anything else in mind other than this thing?
No. That's literally it. Once we figure that out, we can, from my point of view, we can merge it.
Cool.
You can see my screen, okay?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Cool. Okay, so...
I'll just jump in for a short second, just a short intro about what this is actually. So this is like a new approach as to how to do FFI for Aries VCX, right? So currently, the existing options for consuming Aries VCX via FFI from different languages, for many people, for most people, that's like a mobile use cases where they do Java or iOS, and they use FFI to talk to Aries VCX. That's using the libvcx portion of the library, which in the long run we would like to deprecate essentially, and instead we want to encourage people to adopt this kind of modern approach of doing the FFI. So I guess that's about it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So UniFFI is a relatively new tool that lets you create wrappers for Kotlin, Swift, Python, and I think JavaScript soon, hopefully. But it alleviates like the pain of some of the complexities in libvcx, like having those handler maps and using handlers for everything and error states. It eliminates a lot of that pain. So yeah, I've been just working on a proof of concept just to explain the basics of how it works to you guys, and then I guess we can decide if it's something worth taking further. So I've made a separate crate under the wrappers directory. So how Unify works is you create what's called a UDL file. And in this UDL file, you describe all of the interfaces, the structs, methods that you want to expose and, you know, have wrapped over. So you can see my UDL file here. Actually, before I go further into that, so the UDL, Unify has restrictions on what you can wrap over. So they're pretty good. Like, you can wrap over error types and structs and everything. But they put in certain rules in place, such as you can't wrap over async functions directly. Everything that you wrap over has to be thread safe. So they enforce that it's all send and sync. So because of those restrictions, in my opinion, the best approach is usually to create a thin wrapper crate, which is what this is here, which just thinly wraps over the things that can't be directly interpreted by Unify. So that's what you're seeing here. So for example, I was working on wrapping over the connection handler, the old connection handler, I guess. So connection handler, it couldn't be wrapped over directly because it had a lot of mutations that could go on. And basically the approach to solving that is to wrap over it in a mutex fashion so that you can sort of take the lock and then mutate it and then put it back. So here's my thin wrapper over connection. So I've wrapped over some of the basic functions that it has. So this one here is creating a new inviter connection. As I mentioned, you can't wrap over async things directly. So occasionally you'll see things such as block on, which is just a simple wrapper to, you know, execute this as a sync function, so converting async to sync. And then, you know, on the Android side or on the iOS side, you'd launch up a dispatcher IO thread or something of that effect so that it's acting as if it is async. The general pattern is pretty straightforward. So this create inviter, it basically calls on the constructor for connection, create inviter, passing in a handler, passing in a profile, which I'll get to next.
Sorry, can I have a question?
Yes, of course.
So I'm wondering about this. So this create inviter, right? This will be this is the function which will then be exposed on the FFI. This is the FFI wrapper interface, right?
Yes, exactly. So this is
Right. And so this create inviter, for example, as you've shown, the function, it's sync. And then you're using some sort of blocking. So is it possible to have async, maybe you explained it just now, maybe I didn't get it, but is it possible to make create inviter async? And then I guess UniFFI is having some sort of runtime which takes, care of executing it, or do you have to use like always blocking functions?
I haven't dove too much further into it other than basically blocking the current complete. I can't answer it much further than that. This approach here is actually something I've gotten from Aries Askar. Their Python wrapper basically calls onto these block functions so that they can call those async functions.
And they are using this unify approach in RSS car?
No, they aren't. I've just noticed how they, you know, run async functions synchronously just by blocking the current thread.
So they do something like this in the Rust code, some blocking.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah, sorry, I can't answer the question much further than that.
Mm. Yeah, that's fine. I was wondering. I think that's going to be pretty important, like because I don't think this will be very performant in the current state. For example, if you want to like create 50 inviters and all of them have to create keys, but each of those calls will be blocking. And for example, if you call from Node.js, you just have one thread. You call it 50 times, then it wouldn't really run in parallel, would it?
Right. I guess maybe the thing with that is when you're writing the Android code, that is where, you know, you can launch up dispatcher threads.
So yeah, I guess for mobile, this would be like sort of like tolerable. Maybe that's why they do it on Ask. Oh, but Askari is agnostic. It's not necessarily mobile. And I find it surprising that they do this blocking. I find it a bit hacky, but I don't know the case in Aries Askar. But I think it will be, apart from how great it looks, this thing so far, I think that the figure around the async would be like a big improvement, or like important sort of enhancement in the future.
Yeah, for sure. So like you can see here's two basic constructors for a connection here, where all I'm doing basically is wrapping the original Aries VCX connection handler into my own connection, which is unifiable. Is safe for unify. And then you can see here, I've just implemented a couple of the methods which connection has. So a simple one and a synchronous one. Get state, all that has to do is get the handler from the lock, which I'm storing it in, and then, you know, call get state on it. I'm also doing a translation of state just because that enum wasn't unifying immediately. So I guess you can sort of see the basic pattern that's happening here. How you can write these thin wrappers over the Aries VCX objects or structs to create a unify safe one.
I'll let you speak. I have questions, I guess, but I'll just leave you to speak for now. Sorry.
Oh yes, I'll quickly show you. So two constructors and then all the class methods. And then you can see here we got the two constructors which create this connection struct, and then you define in your UDL file all of the methods that the connection has, so get state, pairwise info, and then etc. That's what it looks like in the UDL and how it's represented. And sorry, what was your question?
I was wondering about. Let's go, for example, to the connection. How you create connections, the wrapper code. So create inviter returns some VC unify result, and wraps arc and wraps connection. And then from unify, you can, they have some sort of infrastructure which lets you generate a code for different languages.
Do you want to see that now?
Yeah, maybe we can take a look at it. What I'm actually interested in and where I'm aiming towards is I'm wondering how the memory kind of works. Like if you, for example, create connection here, how is it freed? Like, do you have to? I guess that's like specific. I guess there will be different per different languages. Like, it's gonna be. Do you think it's gonna be garbage collector in the language which eventually will free that connection? I suppose that will be the case. That's kind of how it works in LibVCX actually. But I wonder how the memory model and the allocations and freeing works with UniFFI.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure off the top of my head. So you're wondering if when a connection is garbage collected in an Android application, does it call onto, the drop method of the corresponding
Yeah, I
connection?
guess something like that. And I suppose that it's gonna probably work somewhat like that because in Rust code you don't know how long that connection you return here is gonna exist and who's gonna work with it in Java, for example, right? A person can keep it for a long time, so Rust code doesn't know when to drop it. So I guess it then must become the Java responsibility to somehow free it, this connection instance.
I think that makes sense. Essentially, once memory crosses the FFI boundary, I assume that the, let's say, host language will be responsible for taking care of the memory. Whereas if you were to create a string in one of these functions and then the string gets dropped at the end of the function, that's basically the library's responsibility. And when it gets compiled, the free is where the drop is called implicitly or introduced implicitly by the compiler. Because in libvcx, you're essentially just creating a hook in the garbage collector to free some parts of the connection map, but it wouldn't necessarily have to be like that. If you, for instance, I mean, I don't know exactly how that would work with JavaScript and all that, but if you were to sort of emulate what George is doing here and return a connection, like you remove it from the map and return it, then it crosses the FFI boundary and it's basically going to get garbage collected implicitly by the runtime of Node.js. I just don't know exactly how that mapping would be done between the actual structure, like the Rust type, and the in JavaScript, but yeah.
I think I just worked out a clue on that, which I'll get to in a second when I show you the Android code. So basically how it works to generate your bindings is they have this CLI tool called Unified Bind Gen, and you specify what language wrapper you want. And then you point it at the UDL. And then that will basically spit out, in this case, a Kotlin file, which has, those classes for connection and for the profile holder and all of that stuff, along with a bunch of very confusing boilerplate. And then of course, similar process to libvcx, you have to build this for the appropriate target binary. So in my case, I've just been building it quite simply just for the ARM64 Android. This is just stealing scripts from libvcx. And then that builds out into your binary. Any questions before I show some Android stuff?
Not from my side.
I'm good as well. I think we can go ahead.
Cool. So yeah, once you have that generated bindings file and your binary. In this case, I'm just dragging it into a very simple project to demonstrate how it works. But I imagine you could also pack it up into your AAR file or however libvcx is distributed. I'm not actually too sure about the distribution process. What does that distribution process look like in libvcx for Android?
For Android, well, honestly, I don't remember the details of the. It's codifying the pipeline. There's a bunch of scripts, building the library, then linking the other libraries together. Then, I guess it builds. I don't know what are those Android archives, Mira? Is it ARC? AAR? Something like that, some sort of archive which the Java wrapper isn't binded to, something like that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, cool. Okay, well, yeah, you could essentially do the same thing where you're packaging up the generated bindings and then all of your architectures as your JNI libs. Yeah, cool. So in this fragment, it's just sort of demonstrating what the calls into the binding look like. So take, for example, this button here, create wallet and profile. What it's doing is it's calling onto my new indie profile method. Which I actually forgot to show. But all that's doing is blocking and creating and opening a wallet and then creating a profile and then wrapping it in a unify safe manner.
Hmm.
So that function here maps directly to this one here. And you can see unify is also turned it into camel case, which it does per language, depending on what the language standard is, which is pretty nice. So you can see I've also wrapped over the wallet config struct, which I was able to do directly without, wrapping it in my own wallet config. So this is wrapping directly over it, and you can see Unify has generated out this data class with all of the same methods. All the same fields as the original one.
I also have like option, right, with a question mark. I suppose I'm not familiar so much with the Java syntax.
Yeah, exactly.
Since I dealt with Java. I see.
It's constructive. Cool.
And for example, this wallet config, you how many times you kind of define it somewhere? Is it only in the UDL file, or did you also have to... Is it only in UDL file and that links directly to the vault config in Aries VCX, or did you have to like declare your own kind of vault config in the UniFI wrapper?
Yeah, so this one is directly wrapping over the Aries VCX wallet config.
Oh, right. So I guess all the structures which can like send and sync, as you said, you can simply kind of link them directly, but perhaps the case is like with connection, maybe you need to create the thin wrapper, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you can see all of the things that I'm just directly using and then exposing. Wallet config, Unify is able to wrap over that directly, and these ones as well, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Wallet config and pass it in, and then I'm globally storing this profile in this fragment. So this is what I was talking about before, how it can be the application's responsibility to, call these blocking things within its own thread, within an IO thread. And so that way, I guess you theoretically could, fire off 20 opens at once for all different wallets. Yeah, and so this other button here, create connection, maps to this one. So yeah, this is where I'm calling on that create inviter method that I was showing before. And so yeah, that's a constructor for this connection, which again is that VCX generated one. And then again, I'm globally storing that. And then the last button is
Once you have this connection, you created a new connection, then you can call methods on that object itself, right? I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. So this next button here, show state, it's basically showing how you can call methods on it. So connection.pairwiseinfo returns the pairwise info struct, which has, you know, pw.did and pw.verkey and that stuff. So see if I can get it to work. So yeah, that button creates and opens a wallet. So that, you know, initialized that SQLite database, whatever database it was, on the device, and created the profile. So now this profile is instantiated and ready to be used by this button, create connection. So yeah, as I said, create connection, all it did was use the create inviter method. And then show state, I guess, is probably the most interesting. So you can see by the toast, it's printing out what the state was, which was initial. And then the pairwise info, you see it was able to get all of that data out of the pairwise info, which means that the connection, when you created inviter, did successfully generate, you know, that did and ver key within the connection. And yeah, I haven't gone as far to try mock out an app with, you know, accepting an invite and going through the whole connection state, because that'd turn into a pretty significant fragment just for a demo, I guess. Any questions on that?
I don't know if it's that much of a question, but I do have a pretty wild idea in terms of async. So from what I could gather, the problem with Unify has this problem with wrapping features, right? And crossing them over the FFI boundary, because then they have to be executed in some languages, async runtime and event loop and so on, and they didn't implement that yet.
Can you try to place your mic a little bit closer?
Yeah, I think I don't know why my audio always gets messed up every single time.
Okay, there we go. Picked up the right one. Better. Okay. Yeah, I was using my laptop's microphone for some reason. Anyway. So I was saying that the problem is with sending features through the FFI boundary, because they have to be executed in some languages native async event loop, right? And what you're doing is you're emulating, like you're kind of forcing the async functions to be synced by blocking the runtime on each of them. Yeah. What if, here's the wild idea, what if you would actually spawn the tasks asynchronously and then store the join handles in some sort of a hash map or something. And in a separate thread, you could pull these handles and just manually progress the futures like that. And then you could basically just retrieve the result when the pull is ready and send it to some different part of your code. It would be a completely different way of doing things, but this would sort of allow you to do asynchronous stuff. Like you could have just a background thread that only looks in that hash map and just takes everything and just pulls it constantly. It's doing that all the time. And then, I don't know, through some identifier, you would know what you put in there, so you know where to send it. Does it make any sense?
Yeah. That could work.
Sounds like quite like manual approach, but I guess maybe I guess that could be the way. But I think that's assuming that the UniFFI doesn't sort of support async natively. Like I would imagine that there's an easier way to do it, and maybe I don't know how deep you dug into UniFFI, George, but. Perhaps there is a way you can declare async methods and then UniFFI somehow handling it for you. Like, yeah, so I don't know how UniFFI works, but for example, with the NAPIRS, the FFI approach we use for Node.js, the NAPIRS comes with a runtime. Like a Tokyo, and which is invisible for you, and you just declare async methods, and then async in JavaScript, right?
Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, so I would just expect that something like that should be hopefully possible with UniFFI as well.
Yeah, but I think that the key difference here is that UniFFI is trying to support multiple languages, whereas NAPIRS is only for Node. Like it's targeted, and it's easier for them to know or to map the internals of Rust futures to promises in JavaScript, because they only have one job, whereas UniFFI has to be sort of transparent about that. I don't say it's not possible. I don't know if it's done or not. It's the first time I see this kind of stuff. But it's definitely more complicated than NAPIRS. What do you know about the async functionalities of UniFFI, George? Like, is that supported at all, or
I don't believe it is. I don't know, maybe naively, but I don't really see the problem with doing it this way. Maybe if you guys could explain more, but this is essentially using Android's thread pool to launch off a thread and, you know, run this function, which is technically async but is being run blocking, but it's blocking this dispatch of thread. So, you know, then the threading is in the hands of the Android code, which I think is a better approach than an Android application calling into a Rust binary that fires off its own threads.
The thing with that is essentially Nagent will do a lot of IO, right? So it's going to wait for messages or wait on confirmations for sending messages. So it's going to be like, that's the benefit of the entire async methodology, that you have these green threads, which are much more lightweight than operating system threads. And even the context switching is not as expensive, and you as a user are in control of that. Whereas when you're using threads, you're sort of at the mercy of the operating system. Now, what I'm curious about, again, I don't know any Kotlin or Java to this level. So you're dispatching a thread, but the Tokyo runtime that we're using in Rust also basically will just block while executing the asynchronous function in a thread.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm launching an Android thread using, you know, the native Android thread pool management, and then right. I'm blocking that thread in Rust. I'm blocking that dispatcher thread here. So if I were through this, then it's gonna launch four different threads, and each one of them are gonna get blocked separately.
And well, that's the thing. Did you actually test that? Because the runtime, like when you're blocking the runtime in Tokyo, you are blocking the entire runtime.
Right.
I could be wrong, but I believe that's basically the whole point. Like that's the whole point of blocking it on. What you could do instead, but again, that sort of implies there was some you could basically issue a even if you spawn a blocking task that's still sort of executing in a different thread, and you get a join handle and you have to retrieve the value. But yeah, right now I believe that what's actually happened is that you spawn all these four threads and you dispatch them in the Android app, but the underlying runtime gets blocked on each of them, and that they do not run independently.
Right. Yeah, I see what you mean.
I mean, I guess what you would have to do to, like, I'm not even sure if you need the runtime to that extent. You could just create a future and do a while and just call the poll method on it until you get ready.
Right. Sure.
And that would essentially, like, creating a mini runtime for each of the futures. I don't know, but honestly, I think, like, if you want the most efficient way to go about it, would be sort of that, like letting the Tokyo runtime do its thing, spawning tasks, and then just going through the tasks and retrieving the values as they're done in a background thread.
Right. Yep.
I don't know. Again, I could be wrong. I don't know for sure, but you can play around with it and test this block on thing. Do you create a new runtime, or is it just created once? I believe it was lazily created once.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you're right. So it would.
It's the same runtime.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
Now the thing with, I don't think you can create multiple runtimes either.
No. And yeah.
Maybe actually, I don't know about current thread runtimes. So you can create a runtime in Tokyo, like with just a single threaded runtime. And maybe if you create that kind of a runtime every time you call this block on function, maybe that would work. Like, and would be fairly easier to implement.
Right.
But yeah, and then you could actually get like one thread, one runtime, and you can dispatch them and they would actually run in parallel, I guess.
Yes, yeah, it's interesting. I guess it needs more thought about the async method handling.
I mean, ultimately, I think Patrick is right. Like, probably at some point, if they don't already, or they don't have it planned even, they're probably going to support it because it's a big thing. And that would be really, really cool.
Yeah. I'll need to have a browse through the community discussion. I'm sure they will have talked about it a lot. But off the top of my head.
I mean, other than that, it really looks cool. So
it's awesome. Yeah. I mean, other than the async, I guess that async is like the only thing in like only the attribute or part where Libv6 at current state is like has advantage. But I mean, this is amazing as you can generate all the wrappers you mentioned number of languages, right? Java, iOS, Python. So that's pretty cool. I mean, there's lots of code we currently have to maintain if you want to make changes to Libv6, like FFI interface, and there's like three other places we need to update things. So this is amazing that you can do this. Oh, just do it once and have it everywhere.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I was going to show you this as well. So all the structs, all the impuls have a destroy method attached to them. And I guess I hadn't seen this before, but this looks like it's doing the freeing of the reference counter, which in turn would, I guess, free up the memory in Rust and drop it. So maybe this is how they do it.
Yeah, it looks like it's emulating what the Arc is doing.
Yeah.
It has the internal reference counter, and assume that once that reaches zero, it actually frees the memory.
Yeah.
Is the strong reference counter. But I'm actually, that was maybe a different question. You mentioned at the beginning something about the, like when crossing the FFI boundaries, that types must be send and sync. And you're wrapping the connection, I believe, in an arc. I don't know if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah. They force you to, I guess, pass structs through as if they're arcs. For example, this constructor in the UDL, it says, you know, there's no arc around it, but Unify, what Unify does as well is it generates out, it generates out Rust code, which is exposed in your binary. That is what the wrapper Kotlin interface ends up calling onto. That generated Rust code enforces that, you know, these things are wrapped in arcs, which is why you can see I'm having to return them as arcs.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, I guess it makes sense that if you want to interface with the garbage collector language that uses reference counting, that'll probably be the way to do it. What I'm also curious about is how they handle mutability, though.
Your
passive arc. Okay.
Yeah, you know, so that's why I had to wrap it in this mutex, and then I guess these functions get the mutex and then mutate it and then store it again.
I see. Okay.
For example, this here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you basically have to enforce that in your Rust code so that nothing crashes when you cross the FFI boundary.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Fair enough.
Yep. Yeah, and the other cool part as well is that it does a pretty good job of wrapping your errors as well. So you can see I've created this very basic error type, and it supports this error. And then in UDL, that's exposed as this here. And then all of my methods which return a result marked as throwable. And then in the generated code, you can see it's generated out the exception classes. So it'll throw and pass through these different exception types into this Kotlin code.
Right.
You can pass through messages as well to give more details, et cetera.
Cool. Yeah, I've seen the errors part. That's actually really cool. They map them fairly well.
Mm.
Really interesting.
Cool. Yeah, that's all I had to show.
Awesome. Thank you, George. I was really well prepared, and I mean the code is nice, and you even started the application. Definitely overstated the expectations for this demo. I didn't thought we actually gonna see like working Android emulated demo. So it's really well done.
Yeah, well, you never know if it's working until you put it in an app, you know.
Yeah, that's right. But I guess let's move on to the like next part. I guess just the end meeting discussion about the state machine, state pattern, and serialization. But before we dig into it, I would like to just ask you if you are okay going a little bit over the official meeting minutes. Let's say if we stretch it out to 10 or 15 minutes extra, are you guys okay with that?
It's cool for me.
Yeah, cool for me.
Yeah, I feel like we might need more than 10 minutes for this. So just so we get it kind of cleared up ahead of time. So yeah, where to start? I'm not sure. I guess I'll just like a brief intro, although you are aware of what's going on for the sake of the meeting and the recording. There's a discussion about serialization and its approach and philosophy. So the way this whole thing started mainly is by making this new implementing the new approach with the type state connections and by Bogdan, and I saw this as opportunity to fix inefficiencies or like weaknesses in the serialization format we currently have. And I thought, oh, we can now do a bunch of other, since we are making breaking change on this connection state machine, we can introduce a bunch of other breaking changes at this opportunity, and we can come up with a new, better format. And then this also relates to these thoughts were also triggered by issue with George created a few days ago, last week, about using from parts and to parts methods, which are defined on mediated connections but not on others. And apparently George found this construct useful, and here in this issue is being suggested that we adopt the same sort of methods or pattern for the other state machines as well. Now, then this kind of took us to some of the discussions we had until now internally with Bogdan and Miroslav about actual philosophy of serialization, we're thinking whether the format should be simply completely opaque to the consumers, and it should be just internal, internal matter of ARIES-DCX, and therefore we should actually be quite clear about the fact that you should not rely on what the serialized state machines looks like. This format can change, and it's not meant for sort of direct consumption. So that's kind of an intro. So maybe we can start, since George, you created this issue in the first place, maybe you can give some, background or like kick off the discussion about what you're trying to do, and then we can take it from there.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So yeah, I was working with the connection handler, at least in its old state, and recently in the type state version. And basically, it seems at the moment that the only way that you can, take a ARIES VCX connection and then turn it into something that you can store in your own database or something of that effect, and then later fetch it from your database and reconstruct it into that ARIES VCX connection. The only way to do that at the moment is by using serializer methods. And that's because there's no way to, I guess, manually construct the connection handler with the data that you have yourself. So I guess the problem I have with that being the only way to do it is, I guess the state of the connection handler being serialized and deserialized isn't extremely stable, at least at the moment. So I guess there's no guarantee that if I were to serialize a connection now and then store that string in my database, and then, 2 years later on a newer version of VCX, try to deserialize that back into the connection handler, there's no guarantee that it would be successful. And so because there's not that guarantee, and also just because, in my opinion, it's best practice to store data in your own format rather than relying on a third party's serialization method, at least from a VCX consumer standpoint. It'd be better if there was a way to construct up the connection handler using, you know, raw data, using your invitation message and your did doc. You know, those are DI primitives in a sense. So yeah, that's why I was proposing that the from parts handler, the from parts method of connection should be a public API.
Mm-hmm.
Does that
right, so make sense? Basically, I get it. Like, if you have did doc and if you have some key pairwise keys for that did doc, that represents some sort of DITCOM communication channel, and you want to create a connection object from that, or connection handler from that.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess if you imagine you're a consumer of a VCX, you're an inviter, say you're an inviter, and you generate the invitation and send it out. Now you'd want to take that connection handler and turn it into your own bits of data. So, you know, you'd store your did doc, your pairwise keys, the invitation you generate. You'd take that and store it away in your own database. And then when you get the request message back from the peer that you're connecting with, then you can, you know, fetch it from your database and, you know, take that did doc, that invitation method message, and turn it back into the connection handler that you had originally. And then you can, you know, dot accept request or whatever the method is to take the next step. And then you can store it away again, bring it back. That's the idea, rather than relying on serialization.
Bogdan, what's your take and response?
I mean, so honestly, the selling point that George had in one of his comments was about the fact that regardless of what you do, people will still be able to manipulate the connection in its serialized state and then modify that. Let's say it's a JSON string, and then deserialize it back to a different state. But my take, honestly, would be that this is, in my view, sort of looking for trouble, like arbitrarily modifying a connection, which is part, like a connection state as part of a protocol, which should be followed, let's say, strictly. And then deconstructing that and constructing it back is not something that I would personally do or advise doing. In terms of like the stability of the serialized format, I think that even when we, let's say we merge the type state connection, and a year from now we change the serialization format, we could accommodate the deserialization to try both the old and the new format, so that we can sort of ensure backwards compatibility in that regard. It wouldn't be too difficult and or costly. And then ultimately the old format would get deprecated at some point. If it weren't for the possibility of someone modifying the serialized format, I would honestly be against these public methods of from parts and into parts. I think that the protocol should be followed strictly without shortcuts or, I don't know, alternatives like this. But I guess the other reason might be that, I don't know, if you want to migrate from a different agent implementation, which might store things differently, and you ultimately end up having the same parts, so you could just take those parts and then migrate to the Aries VCX implementation. So that would be, I guess, one good use case. I don't think it would happen too often, but still. And Mira had an idea about these, let's call them these raw methods, to be behind a feature flag or something like that, so that they wouldn't necessarily be directly accessible and people would be, advised to use them with caution.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like that's the way I would do it. I would implement them behind the feature flag, and yeah, advise people to only use them if they really, really, really need to. And I guess it's also in the view of kind of helping them not mess things up, because you can theoretically do it right now with the current implementation of the type state connection. Like even without these methods, you can serialize into something, build a replica, yeah, like code a replica of the connection and deserialize into that, and then take that, split that apart into parts and smaller pieces, and then store them or whatever.
I'll just point out, I guess, like on George's point about like relying, you know, 2 years down the road, relying on the format of VCX. Like if you're gonna like dissect connection in this kind of fashion, like you basically take connection and you generate like, I know there's few things, right? There's a some connection state and thread ID and some pairwise info, maybe something else. In some way, you're still relying, I guess, on the way that, you know, how is this serializing? But you know what I mean? Like, I guess the risk kind of which you were afraid of, I guess it's still there, because 2 years later, this must still serialize into the same thing as it is today.
Yeah, I see your point. So I guess on that, I've been playing around with the type state branch where I've made the from parts method public just so I could test a few things. When the from parts method is public, you're able to basically reconstruct connections with the base data. So a did doc, invitation message, request message, et cetera, thread ID. So I guess what I would consider best practice is if a VCX consumer is storing that data themselves in whatever format they wish, and then they can, you know, construct the invitation method message and thread ID, and then plug that into the from parts method. Yeah, so they don't have to rely on any VCX specific serialization formats.
Well, the format is not necessarily set in stone. It's the, I guess, the serialization method that's set in stone. Mm. The format could be JSON or bin code or anything you want.
Right. Yeah.
The idea, like we had discussions with Bogdan, and the idea, and I tend to I'm rather convinced now. So following the philosophy, I guess there's like actually like two issues here. And I'm gonna use Draw.io because I love diagrams and visualizing ideas. Let's say we have a like connection, some sort of connection object, whether it's the old handler or the like the new type state connection, and then I guess like one thing is what George wants, right, is like having this some sort of API which enables you to dissect the connection into multiple things, so like some state data and did doc maybe, and I don't know, pairwise info, and then like the approach with like serialize. So this will be from parts, from to parts. That's like one thing, and then so questions like should we have this or should we not have it, or should it be behind feature flag? And then the other like issue or question, discussion point is about the serialize, which we currently have, and I think we gonna keep it, because I mean, removing it would be like really huge change for everyone. So the current approach, like with what's on the main branch right now, is yeah, that we generally serialize into some sort of JSON. And then this is data, and there's like a state, and it's like inviter, blah 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 blah, and maybe pairwise info. And it's like generally did key, and it's like generally speaking, like easy to look at and parse and. And it's easy to make it's easy for people currently to fall into pattern where they actually start relying on this structure of the serialized data. And the philosophy, the idea Bogdan was main proponent of, and as I mentioned, I tend to agree with his suggestion now, is that we should make it like completely opaque to the user, so the user shouldn't by any chance attempt to rely on what this JSON looks like, and instead he should just consider it a black box, like, oh, it's some sort of string, you know, or some sort of binary format or whatever. So that's the kind of two issues here. Does this make sense, George and Bogdan? Is this clearly representing the discussion we are having?
It does. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And so then the question is should we given the like new approach and maybe the new philosophy where we want to, as Bogdan said, set in stone the serialized and deserialized methods as a contract. Like, if you use, if you serialize something, we'll give you a guarantee that you'll be able to deserialize it, but consider the serialized data as a black box. Given this approach, and this like kind of contract or promise here, do you think, George, you would like still need or want this approach? Or, I mean, ideally there will be like one canonical way of doing things and it will be less code to maintain. But on the other hand, I don't know, maybe if this is something we really want to have, yes, we can still consider it.
I get what you mean by the if you have a guarantee then it could solve the problem. I don't know, it's still my opinion that it's generally best practice to store data in your own format rather than rely on a third party format from a consumer point of view. Yeah, but I guess if you guys disagree, that's okay. But yeah, I think obfuscating the serialization format is a good idea. It stops people from trying to replicate the connection and then change the data manually themselves.
Yeah, I think in the end, like, I assume that's the main goal of the protocol, and especially this type state pattern approach of having things run in a strict way, so to say, so that you don't end up making mistakes and giving people more access to stuff that they can break might not necessarily be a good idea. I honestly don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to say that I know we shouldn't do it or that it's a bad idea. I just think that there's a very narrow use case for stuff like this, and it can still be done if you really need to. Indeed, you would have to like build your replicas and stuff like that. I don't know. And replicas can end up being out of sync, like, I don't know, if the serialization format changes. But I guess this is also the reason why we wouldn't necessarily advise to use this kind of approach. Because, yeah, then things will break or might break.
How about this? How about the state machines? You know, the state machines or these handlers or these objects, they wouldn't actually be serializable. We wouldn't declare, you know, serializable on it. We wouldn't derive it. What we instead would do, if we have this kind of pair of methods, which would produce, you know, number of building blocks, some components of the connections, of the connection, which are serializable. So everything returned here, each of these parts, as we speak, would be serializable. And it wouldn't be at all a concern of ArrayZCX how to, you know, serialize things, how to serialize connection. And it, now when I come to think about it, it's very opinionated that, you know, we do it to string and it's JSON. Like, why should it be hard coded in ArrayZCX? On the other hand, we want to keep the maintain the libvcx contract, so we don't want to like go completely like crazy and make something completely new, and we want to preserve the interfaces. So instead of having this in ArrayZCX, let me do some swim lines here. Let me do like this is.
I'm gonna just add an idea to that. We don't enforce any serialization format in ArrayZCX. Implementing the serialize trait only allows them to serialize them to anything. They don't have to be JSON.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's true. But well, where I was heading, well, maybe I'm wrong, but I'll just finish my original idea. Kind of, maybe it's like technically slightly wrong, or you can correct it or iterate on it. But the idea was that the kind of main interface would be like, oh, you can dissect this state machines into some like reasonable chunks of things which belong together, like state data, or maybe DDoc or pairwise info. Maybe like thread ID, just some things you typically want to maybe like have a separate or access frequently, or kind of deal with it individually. And then this would basically accommodate like George's need, or people who want to just structure, and this would be like generic enough for anyone to like implement any kind of serialization and organize the data in a way they desire. And then in a libvcx, to the back, different color, this would be libvcx. And then in libvcx, basically that's where we would implement the sort of take these things together. I don't know how to draw it, but like pick some arrow, like put it together again. We would use the same sort of methods maybe. And we would like wire it up together again, and basically some connection, which would then serialize into our like OPEC string, as you know, following the libvcx kind of idea, like philosophy. And so this way, this would cover both George's case, and we could still do the same things the same way we do them, even preserve the same serialization format we have currently, perhaps.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, I guess maybe I'm not sure if it solves Bogdan's main issue with consumers being able to put the connection handler into a strange state by, you know, using from parts with some invalid state data.
Well, I think, like, I mean, like, if the I guess it's like granular, kind of granular access, and you can mess it up. But like, I guess like it's your responsibility of consumer not to like commingle like two different connections together or something. And yeah, so you can always, there's always ways to mess it up somehow in a database. Or I wouldn't be personally particularly like concerned about consumers messing up the data, and if they do, like it's their problem. It's granular API. People have it gives everyone like a lot of power, and with great power comes great responsibility. What do you think, Bogdan?
Yeah, no, I share that opinion as well. It is a bit philosophical whether you give users control over things and they can shoot themselves in the foot, or whether you restrict it and ensure that they don't make mistakes, but sort of take away some of the freedom that other users might need. Yeah, not too sure.
I don't know. I mean, again, from my point of view, we can implement the methods. I wouldn't necessarily take away the serialization and deserialization from the connection itself. I think, honestly, that's going to be the main way people are going to use it. And if I don't know, there is any need to decompose and recompose the connection, we can just implement the from parts and into parts methods. And then if people really want, they can store these in a different format or whatever. Yeah, I mean, I was already, like, when the meeting started, I was sort of already decided that we can implement this for the few use cases when people want to do things differently, or I don't know. Yeah, just have more control over the state machine, I guess, or the state machine data. Yeah, I guess like the thing that I would be against would be people relying on the serialized format.
This is your main concern, right?
Yeah, I think that should always be sort of like a black box. And black box is a wrong term. It's completely visible, but it's just that we shouldn't guarantee that things will stay the same in that regard, at least not right now. Maybe in the future, when things are really stable and we decide together that there's absolutely nothing else we can do to the connection state machine, let's say, then yeah, we can tell people, yeah, this is going to be the stable format from now on, because the protocol is completely implemented, it's running smoothly, it has everything we wanted to have, and that's it. Right now, I think there's still room for improvement. So that's why I would keep, and I would be reserved about making such a promise.
Yeah.
George, I guess you're okay with that because you're not even using libvcx and you do this serialization yourself, right? So this is not really something that concerns you too much.
I guess
but it's not about libvcx. Sorry, George, that's not about libvcx, that's about Aries vcx. I think the connection should still be serializable and deserializable without any issue.
So you would just do this, right?
Right, yeah.
And basically forget about this. Okay, so we are back where we started, but it was a good exercise.
Yeah. So going off what you're saying, I guess Ares VCX is not 100% ready to make a promise that a serialized connection now will be able to deserialize in 2 years' time in the long-term future.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, not that we can make that promise. What we can promise is that that if you serialize a connection today and you serialize it again in 2 years, that the two strings will be the same, provided that the connection is exactly the same. I think that's the promise we cannot make.
Yeah.
Whether you can deserialize from both the old and the new string, we can definitely accommodate that.
Yes, but you'd need potentially like some migration when you deserialize it, I guess.
Yeah, you can do an attempt to deserialize, you know, to the new format, which should be the default, I guess. And then if that fails, you can try to deserialize to the old format and then transpose that to the current connection state machine. It wouldn't be too difficult. And it would be completely transparent to users. They wouldn't have to do any sort of shenanigans to continue using that.
Yes, yeah, I see.
Okay, so what about from and two parts? Bogdan, as I understood,
I'm on board. Okay. As I said, I think that people can, like, regardless of what we're gonna do, they could still, meddle with that. So we might as well make it a bit more consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I agree with hiding it behind a feature flag at least. Might be a good idea, because then they really have to opt in and say they know what they're doing.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it should be sort of an advanced feature for people that really need it and really know what they're doing. And especially like if you take the scenario of migrating from a different Ares agent implementation, you're probably going to do that in a it's going to be a one-time thing, right? So you could convert your connections maybe in a separate program, store them back, and then fire up the Ares VCX agent or the Ares VCX based agent and just use it without doing anything in terms of that.
Yeah. Cool.
So that you wouldn't even need the feature flag in your main agent. That's what I mean. You could just do it separately as a one-time thing.
Yes. Gotcha. Cool. Okay, and in terms of what this means for how it would be implemented, I've found that all you really need is the from parts method to get this to work, because you can reconstruct that, you know, the requested state struct and all those structs.
Right. And you need the into parts method so that you can deconstruct it as well, I guess.
Right. But you can do that already with the methods that are provided on that connection, like, you know, dot there did doc, all those methods.
I don't think you can. I don't think you have the state available. Then I have to look into it a bit. Like,
right, okay, I see what you mean.
So you cannot get the actual state, let's call it the fat state that actually has the data in it. You can get a thin state of a generic connection for runtime matching, but you don't get the data inside the state. So we can just implement an additional method from parts and into parts, and that's it.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, the from parts method you have at the moment, which is pub crate.
I'll just make it public.
Yeah, I found, at least from my use case, that's all I needed to get things to work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But maybe there should be other two parts methods.
Essentially, I'm thinking again about the states. So the states cannot be constructed, I believe. You can actually. You can construct the state.
Yeah, they're all public, those states.
Right. Yeah, okay. So you can construct the state, they all have the new method. So given that you can construct your state, pass it to from parts of method of a connection, and there you go.
Yeah, and all the constructors for your state objects they sort of take in the main primitive mm-hmm. data, like the invitation right. message and the thread ID and their did doc. It's very like primitive right. data.
Right.
Which is great.
Cool. I guess this settles it then.
Yeah, I think we're good. So it was a good discussion. It was a long call. I think it was worth it, and it was a good one. And we covered everything what was on the agenda. So thank you guys again for hopping on here and even staying overboard. And it's almost 25 minutes later. Thank you so much, and enjoy your weekend, which is coming soon. And I'll see you next week.
Cool. Thank you. Cool. You too. Yeah. Cheers. Thanks for the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. Cheers. Likewise. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Doozy up.